You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm on the coast of this wonderful podcast, and joining me for our weekly show, a man who has not lost five games in a row, a man who is not in a slump, Mr. Tony is Tony. You were at, what, four of these games this week? Were you at all four? Or did you get, no, one was in
I was at the Mavericks four. Game, but I was not in Toronto. So, No, I was at half of them.
But you've been at four of the last five losses, so maybe you're the reason they've been losing.
Yes, that is true. I am bad luck. Yeah, me and Adam both had the same thought, everybody. We both thought this might be the worst week of Pacers basketball since we started doing this show together, which is just crazy to think about. Riding so high.
There were a couple. So there was the start of the season, which is pretty crappy.
The start of the season was crap. They had a rough stretch at the start of the very first season.
Yeah, where they went like lost four in a row, and There was a players only meeting. Maybe that's what they're going to have soon. I don't know, but
I highly doubt it.
Yeah, I think we're just going to jump into it and kind of just free flow probably for the next 20 or 30 minutes, just about all the stuff we on our mind about.
We'll pick bad topics one by one.
Yeah, and then at the end of the show, obviously, we'll preview this upcoming week, which is only two games because of the short week because of the All-Star break. But I think the first place to start, and I know it's going to – it's kind of sad and disappointing. Maybe don't want to talk about it, but I think we've got to talk about how bad Vic's been this past week.
Yeah, and that's what makes a lot of this so weird. And, like, obviously they're playing bad. Like, everything we're saying today, not an excuse. I know everybody knows that, but I need the caveats. Not an excuse. We knew he would not be old Vic. But he has been really bad. And mostly it's two things to me. Because I had to look this up and I almost didn't believe it. His turnover rate right now is actually lower than it was his first season in Indiana.
It's not turnovers. It's his problem.
He's missing everything.
Yeah.
Just everything. And he's taking – now this is a stat I had for an article I'm writing about him right now. He is taking the most shots per possession and per minute that he ever has in his career, including his All-Star seasons here. So he is very trigger happy, and I understand wanting to shoot through the rust. And, you know, like against Toronto, he had a few, he finally like put together some not abysmal shooting games. But in general, he has just, the way he not disrupts the flow, but like the way he ends the possession, it feels like a lot of times the ball comes his way as he tries to shoot through the slump has not been helpful.
So, I mean, the way he's played makes me think, are we sure he shouldn't even play the season at all so far? I mean, I know that you need to play through. No, but here's the way I look at it, right? So, When you've been hurt for a year and you're coming into kind of this new team, I kind of compare it to Paul George that year. He came back and played, what, six, seven games after he snapped his leg in half, right? And he came off the bench. And but he wasn't horrible because he sort of just took – like, he didn't play like Paul George. He played like a hurt version of himself who's 70% of the player, right? He kind of came in, hit a couple threes, tried to play some D, but didn't try to, like, overexert himself into a situation, didn't try to, like, take control of it in a way, and kind of just said, I'm here when you need me as like the fourth or fifth guy, but I'm not going to exert myself into, you know, your guys' chemistry and flow because that's been working for you guys, right? The Pacers were a borderline playoff team that year. With Vic, you know, I get they tried that, right? Come off the bench, just kind of play with the bench unit, kind of get in a flow. But he has this weird thing where he immediately has inserted himself as, I'm Victor Oladipo, I'm the best player on this team, which maybe at his peak he will be. But like right now he's not. He has absolutely zero touch inside 10 feet. I mean, I'm going to pull up his like distance shot, but I mean, I've just watching him, so from 0 to 3 feet, he's shooting 50%, which for him is like 15% lower than that at his peak. I mean, he has not made a shot from 10 to 16 feet, and I might have taken a ton of those. He can't hit his three. He's 21% from three. Like, he doesn't have that same touch he had the past, you know, 2 years, where if he got inside 5-6 feet, he was going to get fouled and banging off the glass. I remember when he first finally hit his peak with the Pacers that first season, I thought, I've never seen a guy be able to go around the rim and finish the way he has, at least in a Pacer uniform, right? But he doesn't have it anymore. And when he doesn't have that, his entire offensive aura is gone. And then he's just kind of playing your ball, my ball. I'm going to force some shots. I'm not going to let Brogdon do here. And it kind of throws everything out of whack. And I don't know. I mean, maybe he should be playing as much right now. He should be maybe eased in a little bit more or whatnot. I don't really know what the solution is. But right now, it's just not working.
When he does pass, they're really good too. That's what's super interesting to me.
Yeah, when they double team him and get to the Sabonis, that's been like the most that's been really effective play.
His pocket passes have been awesome. So it's interesting that that's an exaggeration, but the smaller extent of the time that he is choosing to pass than in past seasons is interesting to me because those have been good sets. And I get him wanting to shoot off the rust, and since he's since he started, which you were right about this, I thought they would stick to the plan for much longer, their original plan for much longer. But since he started, he shot a little better, and it's still been pretty rough. But
The thing is, though, they had that plan, but he was still playing with this. Like, if you're going to put him with the bench unit, play him with the bench unit only, and not the 6 minute and a quarter crap where he's playing in these, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I agree.
No way to get any chemistry that way. You're playing half the time with one unit, half the time with the other unit. It's not working.
I'm glad the current minutes limit has him with the guys, so I'll actually play with
one. Exactly. Double. Just pick one. I don't care whether it was all bench or all starters. I think I prefer all starters because that's going to be the long run more beneficial thing. But just pick one and stick to that. Stop trying to get him in both sides and just getting him.
Yeah, I'm with you.
It's all out of freaking whack.
Yeah. And I think you have a good point that I don't know this. I'm not going to ask a player this because no one knows this about, like, no one will admit this about themselves if it is true. But, like, I do wonder if they're like, well, I'm not getting the ball as much. I have to take advantage when I get it now. Like, I don't know that to be true, but I think that's just a natural human thing. So who knows? Last night they looked a little bit against the Pelicans if he was out. They looked a little bit more Sherry, if that makes sense. And, like, Warren and Lamb were good, but yeah, Vic's shot has to be better. Like, his best shooting game so far is 5 for 11. That's not, like, horrible, but I think he's going to have to be better finishing around the rim, like you said. Still looks a little afraid of contact to me. Like, he has a lot of those layups that he just kind of soars because he's leaning away and has to overcompensate. So, his burst has been good to me. You know, he looks fast, and that is encouraging to me. He just has to pair it with all the stuff he used to be good at, and that might never happen, but at least this season, but it seems like that he should be doing better than he is, but he's just not.
Yeah, he doesn't really doesn't have any touch, it feels like. It feels like he's just like everything is just like, I want to say it's like 3 degrees off, but that's what it feels like, right? We're like, before we're like, he would get in the dice to the lane and he would just like be falling into a dude and be able to throw it up and just have like this kind of like really nice flow. And so what's odd about it is it feels like that's a reversion back to where he was before he came to the Pacers, right? That was his big thing, I think, before Indiana, which he was this good player, but he wasn't quite had all together. He couldn't quite finish around the rim at the rate he was. He couldn't quite hit a 3-point shot at a high enough rate to make it effective. Like, all these little things. And, you know, he obviously changed his body and became a much more athletic player and a much just different player the last years in Indiana. And just it feels like it's kind of regressed. And I wonder if some of that is because he was used to playing that way, and then he had to trick his body to play a different way, and the injury kind of reverted him back. And then, I don't know. I mean, then none of the players he's playing with really fit with him that well at the moment, right? Because you don't have, I don't think Lamb fits well as Warren does, to be honest. I think that's,
Oh, absolutely.
And that's part of the problem. And I think it's weird to play with two bigs. And it took the Pacers used to playing, like, Brogdon got the debt of playing two big guys like that a lot. Because it screws up spacing a tiny bit. And it makes it like, if you watch like Brogdon and Sabonis, right? Brogdon pretty much any time he gets caught just bails and goes to Sabonis, right? Oladipo doesn't do that as much because he's not used to that. He's not used to, if I get screwed, just get this bonus. He'll figure out how to get somebody something because he's an awesome offensive player. And so it's just some of that. It's like turning to other players and whatnot because, right, Oladipo's never played at the center this good. I mean, when you look at Sabonis, right? He's played with Turner, who is a good defensive player, but offensively, he's never been able to be like, oh, if I get double teams, give the ball to Sabonis and let him just figure it out because he's been that awesome. So I don't know. Hopefully this is cured if they play 20 games or like that, but it just right now it looks really, really bad.
Yeah. And that what you're kind of saying is sort of the optimist's view of what's gone on. Is that, okay, first of all, you look around the rotation, Justin Holiday, TJ McConnell, Jeremy Lamb, TJ Warren, Malcolm Brogdon. He's never played with these guys, like a single basketball game. So I understood he's around them all the time. He's watched the team. Playing with them is something different. And Caitlin Cooper brought this up and it made me look into it. But like, there's a lot of possessions where they're shooting late in the shot clock, which is not something the Pacers typically do now because the set's a little out of whack or the timing's a little worse and they don't get the shot that they normally get. So they have to do something late in the clock. Like, that will all smooth out at some point. Like, that's just not how they play. So yeah. The optimist says he'll figure out like that about Sabonis, like you just said, or he'll figure out how to use Brogdon better, right? He had a few moments against the Raptors where he would run a pick and roll with Sabonis and Brogdon was hovering 10 feet away behind the 3-point line and he just dined him up for an easy three. Like, that kind of stuff will materialize more often. But until it does, there's going to be a lot of kinks to work through, and it has not been pretty.
Yeah, I think part of what we're looking at, too, is a team that is sort of – this is like what you would see in training camp, all this kind of disjointed, stuff, but we're watching them play out in real time, right? And maybe, because we don't even know how much Vic was practicing with the starters originally before he even came back, right? I know he's playing some with the Madden and stuff like that. Like, some of this, like – because we saw what the Pacers started the year, right? They were really poor for the first three games, and they kind of figured it out. They figured each other's spots and where to find players, stuff like that. And it just took some time, and he has to sort of do that while everybody else knows everybody's spots, right? So it's just weird for him. And I guess maybe this is cured with just harder practice, stuff like that, and just constant, you know what I mean? Working on, you know, Vic cuts one way and looking, okay, what's the best option? Like, is it me to find Bart in the corner or Warren cutting, and what am I going to see? And then, like I said, I think it goes back to just he hasn't played consistently with the same amount of people for a long enough time yet, and it's just – it's all out of whack.
Yeah. And even with all these struggles, late in the Mavs game, they were tied or ahead. Late in the Toronto game, they were up 10. Late in the other Toronto game, they were right in it. Late in the Pelicans game, they were winning. Like, that's not saying they're playing good, but their clutch play, with or without him this week, has been god-awful. Like some of the worst basketball I've seen this team play ever. And a lot of the, oh, my God, the sky is falling reactions, which this is pretty bad. You could get pretty close to that if you wanted. But is like, that's fresh on the brain. That's the end of the game. That's when it all matters. And they're just not executing at all. And that is very problematic.
Yeah, I mean, I think the clutch play goes back to some of the to the chemistry part, where it does look very much like his turn, my turn kind of thing with him and Brogdon, where instead of, you know, like I think before it was pretty much understood Brogdon, if he's healthy, he's going to take the shot or he's going to find Sabonis and some play, right? That's going to be the way they try to score, right? But now if Vic and Brogdon is sort of like, well, who's going to stay on the corner and maybe wait for a three, maybe not get one, and it's just – and with Vic shooting so poorly and really Brogdon shooting so poorly this past week too, it's like neither have been effective enough to do anything.
So 16 minutes of clutch play since Vic came back, and they have a defensive rating of 136.4, and their defense has been pretty bad too. I want to talk about that at some point. Well, go ahead.
I would say I think that, and that goes to maybe the biggest thing that will solve this whole problem is TJ Warren. I mean, I think we underestimated, and maybe we have underestimated, but I think just thinking back, it's been some underestimation of how good Warren has been for this Pacer team. I mean, talking about a guy who, I'm just looking at shooting splits right now, 52, 38, 18.2 points per game, had played every game until he got a concussion, is 6'9 body. Well, he might not be the best defender, but is a body out there that, you know, can guard the Siakams and the Kristaps Porzingis on switches and things like that just other guys can't, you know, instead of a Jeremy Lamb or a Justin Holiday. Like, I'm wondering if Warren sort of solved a lot of these problems eventually.
That would be nice. They had him down the stretch against the Pels, and he did not help. Although, to be fair, he never shot. I don't think he shot the ball once.
But remember, Vic didn't play in that game. So, in this whole thing where it's still disjointed in terms of, like, Warren with Vic and Brogdon, does that equal something else than what is, you know, Lamb, Brogdon, Warren? You know,
and that game was the one where the defense stood out to me the most, right? 3:30 to go. I mean, obviously, the Raptors, you'd think the defense is bad, but a lot of those, they gave up on stupid turnovers. Like, their set defense wasn't so bad outside of the Ibaka three. They were up 108-106 with 3:30 to go, right? They were winning with 3.5 minutes left in this game. And then just Drew three. Redick drives. Like, Drew hits another jumper. Nico Melli hits a shot. Like, Drew hits another three. All of a sudden, you're down eight. What just happened? They're having trouble keeping guys in front of them, and that extends to not the clutch, and they just are collapsing too far in. They give up the open shot. They aren't being able to stay out on the shooters when they recover. They have to be better at that because they cannot get a stop when it matters right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's the most baffling thing to me because the one thing these Patriot teams have had, even, I mean, we're talking, go all the way back to Rick Carlisle, maybe O'Brien, the little period wasn't that good, but like the identity's always been, you know what, even if we suck on offense, we're going to be good enough on D to make, you know, end the game. Like there used to be games, I think last year, where they would be down one and literally be down one the entire time because they couldn't score, but the other team couldn't score either. Like they're just, it's baffling that the defense has now become their weak point. And it goes a lot back to second chance points and rebounding in that way. But it just, and I can't figure it out because I think that was supposed to be the one strength of like why you play Turner and stuff like that is you've got a guy who is just awesome defender who really is sort of because of all the 3-point shooting is being pushed off the court because teams are figuring out that if you drive into Turner, you take him out of the rim, then they can offensive rebound, kick it out to somebody. And that's basically been the go-to play, right? I mean, if you watch most of the plays.
He does the part he's supposed to. He forces the miss at the rim. Yeah. And then everything else just gone.
No, and like, I mean, I'm thinking back to the Raptors game too. It's like they figured out, there were a couple times where they figured out where with the Davis, he was kept cutting and dunking. I mean, it was just like, oh yeah, if we just go this way, we can beat our defender and then Turner has to step up and then there's nobody to watch the back end. Like, it's just like,
over and over.
Simple things that if I was playing basketball, like, oh yeah, let's just keep running that play over and over again until they stop. Like, it's these things that I don't expect from a team, one that has Dan Burke as their defensive kind of coordinator and an Amy Millen team who's.
Has he slept this week? He's probably had the worst week of his life.
Yeah, and you know, the one positive thing is usually when they have this just terrible of run, they like double down on their defense, they in practice and they figure it out. But I mean, it's just like, it's baffling. Like, remember they had that little stretch against, what was it, Denver? Oh, who else they lose to that week in early January? They kind of figured it out for a little bit. Now they're back to where they were before, and it's just like, just mind hurts my head to think about it.
Yeah, it's very bizarre. The clutch defense has been ridiculously bad, and I like the only team with the worst defensive rating with substantial minutes in this stretch is the Cavs, who really are a horrible basketball team.
Are the Cavs playing three centers right now? I don't even know what they're doing.
Yeah, that we get that we didn't talk about it, but they have to play Drummond two more times this year now, which is
oh god, there's another 25 and 20. All right, let's do this. Let's take a quick break and then let's do. Well, we'll talk about Nate McMillan, and let's do one of the positives of this kind of losing streak. Today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by EchelonFit.com. To get fit in 2020, you don't have to join a gym or pay a ton for overpriced fitness equipment. The best way to get in the best shape of your life is with Echelon. Go to EchelonFit.com to discover their EX1 connected fitness bike that offers a high-quality, at-home cycling experience at less than half the price of a Peloton. Echelon makes beautiful engineered products for everyone, busy mom and dads, first responders, elite athletes, whatever your activity level. And with the daily live and on-demand studio classes in your home, you'll never have to step foot in a gym again. You'll love Echelon, but if you aren't 100% satisfied, they'll give you your money back. Join the hundreds of thousands of men and women who are getting fit with Echelon today. And go to echelonfit.com right now, /LOMBA. That's echelonfit.com, /LOMBA to learn about their limited time free Apple iPad offer. That's right. Go to echelonfit.com, /LOMBA to learn about the exclusive offer and get your Echelon bike today. All right. So one of the positives of this winning streak might be the fact that it's probably better to be the sixth seed, right?
Yeah, I think. For those that don't know this, I think this is finally starting to circulate the Pacers interwebs. Many people are saying, you know what? If this team's going to peak right before the playoffs, I'd rather be the sixth seed so you don't have to play Milwaukee till the conference finals if that's how it goes.
Yeah, and I think the one thing I worry about is remember that year they were going to be the five seed and play Philly in the first round and then the LeBron's team somehow screwed up somewhere along the line. Like, I'm afraid for some weird screwy process, they still end up as the five seed because Philly loses like ungodly amount of games because Philly
like they are right now.
Yeah, like I mean, like
Philly's only a half game behind them.
Philly's been so bad. Because like, what's happening now with the way Toronto's been winning, really Miami and Boston, they've sort of those three teams are sort of separating themselves as the 2, 3, 4. I think they're, and then it's really Philly and Indiana in this next tier, and then there's a huge drop, and then there's the Nets. But not, they're not going to be lower
than the drop. The eighth seed might win like 32 games.
Yeah, I looked at this morning. I like didn't realize. I mean, I think I knew it, but like the fact that the Nets are like what 23-28 in the seventh seed is ridiculous. That's like miserable.
The Magic's current win percentage, they're the eighth seed at 22-31, would have them in the playoffs with 34 wins.
I mean, it shows the strength of the
top. That's stupid.
It shows the strength of the top six, right? I mean, that's
yes.
The
like top, at least all the playoff teams in the West are going to be 500. that is insanely bad.
The eight seed might be not quite, but it'll be close. The
Grizzlies are 500.
Yeah, but I see them. It might be 40-42 by the time it happens.
Oh yeah, yeah, whatever.
That's what I mean.
Close enough.
But yes, I know what you mean. But I mean, right? Because I think the whole goal of this season, though, is to win a first round series. Like that's like the step you have to take. You don't win. And
if it gets to that point, that'll absolutely be the goal.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it doesn't. So.
Gets to the point, whatever.
And the only way to win a first series probably is to have home court. I don't know the stats, but I'm sure if you look at it, like barely ever does a team that's not one of the top four seeds win their first round series. Maybe the 4 or 5, a 5 seed does win, but it's really rare. So, well, I think it might be a blessing in disguise to be the 6 seed for the long run if they are really peaking and playing well. I think ultimately that 4 seed is probably still the goal to win a first round series.
Yeah, the Heat 4 games ahead of them. The Raptors 4 games ahead of the Heat now. So getting up to 2 is probably out of the question now.
Oh, that's never happening.
Yeah. The difference between the Pacers and the 8 seed is almost the same as the Pacers and the Raptors. Yeah, I don't want to talk about like cratering for the 6 intentionally or anything, but it could be better depending on like the only way you'd want the 5-4 if assuming Milwaukee's the one and let's be real they're going to be is if you really love the team you'd be playing. Like if you prefer one of Toronto, Boston, Miami over the other two substantially. And you know you get that team as your first-round opponent. If you get the 5, then you go for it. But if not, then, yeah, you can be comfy with the 6. So that's the solace of losing a ton is it gets you away from the Bucks if things go well.
Yeah, I don't think – I mean, I know you talk about Toronto might be their best matchup to win, right? But Toronto's not
– I used to think the opposite. I used to think the Raptors would be a terrible matchup, but these two games actually – you know, they lost both, so this sounds dumb. But they were a little encouraging to me.
Yeah, the problem is Toronto's not going to be lower than the threes. They're four games ahead of Miami right now. They're not going to lose probably for the rest of the season the way they're playing
right now. That is true.
They won 14 in a row, which is ridiculous.
They're on fire. It's unbelievable. Their win streak right now has more wins than the Cavs have all season.
So here's the thing. They beat Boston, right? But now Boston, if it was 100% healthy, which they weren't that game because remember, Hayward got hurt.
No Marcus Smart.
Yeah, they're probably less beatable, but, I mean, they haven't been healthy all year, so let's say they're going to be healthy at come to playoff time. Miami have lost twice, one time without, but neither time without Vic, so who knows if Vic, you know, it's like I don't know. I don't think any of the three teams that could play are any worse or any better. I think they both have their strength and weaknesses over the Pacers, so I think just being the sixth seed just gives them a better shot, I guess, maybe in these conference finals, I guess.
Yeah, that's possible. And I actually, let me phrase that. That's likely, honestly, because the Bucks are just going to stomp people. But
oh, yeah, the Bucks. I mean, the Bucks were in the East unless
– Right. And someone was texting me, and this is the best time to totally suck. Take, and that was baked in there. I was like, well, okay, 60 is technically
We also are kind of in the dog days of the NBA. You know, they call it the dog days of summer in baseball. I call them
the Pacers normally wreck the dog days of the NBA, though.
Well, there was that year with Paul George last year where they were just miserable. Like
last year they went, like, they lost four in a row right after Vic got hurt and then won, like, 6 out of 7 right before the All-Star.
Well, part of that has to do with last year they had a more veteran team that was just new. This was the time to kind of pile on the wins versus –
All right, I'm going to read the text of this is the best time that could happen to this could happen to them. Okay. This person has not allowed me to do this, so I will not say their name. One, it is consistent with the start of their season. And this is practically their quote unquote second season. Agreed. I made that comparison before. Two, happening right before the All-Star break. Yes, that is true. Three, putting them back into chippy underdogs rather than cute story to national guys. Yep. Four, reduced expectations on Oladipo to buy him more time into getting into a rhythm. Also true. Five is the 6-1. And then the last one is reality check to how much of a gap there still is with the good teams. That is all true. These are all good points.
Can I ask you one question? I don't remember this off the top of my head. What's the Pacers' pick protection this year?
They it's lottery protected. So
okay. I wonder if it's 1 for 20 or lottery. Okay.
They will be having their second round pick no matter what. Yeah, pretty interesting stuff. You want to talk about Nate McMillan?
Yeah, I think we should do that for a few minutes. I don't know. I mean, I think there's a lot of land to go around. So, I mean, start with where this has been. A lot of people have been on Twitter. We've seen it, both of us, about firing Nate and all this other stuff, you know, not good enough coach. And I understand both of us probably don't think he's probably one of the top five best coaches in the league.
Absolutely not.
I think he falls probably in the 5 to 12 range. I mean, if I had to rank him, I don't really know where I'd rank him. But there's a lot of, like, kind of average coaches, and he probably falls in there. And he consistently brings a team to 40-something wins. I mean, that's something he can do. He gets you 48 wins. You're in the playoffs every year if he's your coach. I mean, he goes back to his days in Portland. You can see the same thing. He's a playoff coach. Now, he's not a playoff-winning coach, but he's a get-you-to-the-playoff coach. But I don't know if what's happening now is his fault at all, right? I mean, I'm sure some of it is because it's execution-wise, but from what I've watched, it's been just the players have sucked. I mean, I don't know how to put it, right? It's not really been, you know, some terrible error at the end of a game where they're not, you know, drawing up the right play or whatnot. They're, you know, what it seemed like to me is guys getting clean shots, they're just missing them, and they're just bricking them, and they're not rebounding on second chance, which is nothing he could do about this, except, you know, yell at them to rebound better, right? I don't know. I don't think he bears as much blame as probably people think.
My favorite thing people say is how, you know, wow, he is not getting in these guys. Yeah, like what you just said. Like, he's not coaching them to rebound and stuff. It's like, it's not like he's, like, sitting in the film session, like, good job, guys. You're doing great on the glass. You know, like, what? So this is like people are really binary about this stuff. This is what I always joke about on Twitter. It's like the team loses, Nate fucked up. And if the team wins, the players did awesome. It's like, no, there's some pros and cons of every party involved, no matter what. And Nate's had his bad things during the stretch, right? Against the Raptors at the end of that game, they're up 10. Bringing in Miles finally bringing in Miles, too late to me, by the way. They were growing their lead. They needed to hold it, and they waited a little longer to bring him in. And then to finally bring him in when Siakam is the only center, so Miles has to contain him, which did not work, was bad. And not calling a timeout if the offensive rebound was bad. Like, these things are coaching mistakes. But he did not throw the ball over the middle of the court to the Raptors two times, and he did not, you know, like, miss the shots. Like you said, like, clearly there is blame on every party. And I'm going to read Kaylin's tweet here because she nailed the phrasing to me of what, like, is so hard right now is – this is about Nate. It says, he's not immune to criticism, but think readjusting to have Vic back while also having other players out of the lineup is really hard. And I agree with that. It's got to be so hard to piece together who should be on the court at what time. That's what made last night against the Pelicans kind of weird, because they had the rotation that he's sort of used to. But even then, he went to Sumner over Aaron Holiday, things like that. Like, he's had a – it's been really hard for him to set the team up for success given the situation that they're in right now.
Yeah, I think against Toronto, you can make a really good case that, one, he should not have brought Turner in because Turner came cold off the bench.
And he shouldn't have right then. I think he should have 2 minutes before that.
Yeah, but by that point, though, he missed the boat, I guess. Would
be my yes, point. Yes.
But that point, he was like, when they were trying to – and then his other thing I give him credit for is that, like, you expect Malcolm Brogdon, your smartest player and one of them, you know.
Yeah, what the heck was that
pass? To be able to execute a press, you know, how to beat a press. But then again, you look at the guy, like why was the ball even thrown halfway across to Turner when you knew immediately was thrown, it was going to get – like that. I don't know why. If you had told me, hey, the pitcher's going to get pressed, who would be the guy that would call the turnover? Give me the guy who throws the ball and the guy who drops it. I would say it's a bonus Turner every time.
Yep.
And that's what happened.
Well, and they did a good job breaking the press for like 2.5 minutes. And then they just forgot what to do.
And that's a problem, but then you call a timeout, right? You see it, just get the ball down the court, you know, move it up and figure it out, right? Instead of just, you know, that was
bizarre.
But I mean, I go back to it's the execution of these players sometimes. It's not necessarily all him. Certainly he deserves some blame. And this team ends up only winning 45 games and moves in the first round of the playoffs and sleep again, his job might be on the line for sure. I mean, at that point, it's like you've had 2 years in a row of the same, you know, the same
three.
Well, the first year, I would say they almost won that series. They gave a pretty good fight to the team that won the East. Like, I don't, you know, I guess
they get swept, we'll have a serious conversation.
Yeah, they swept their 5-1, same result, same amount of wins with a team that I think is probably better and was on pace to be better, right? They were 31-17 at one point. Like, this team was, I thought, going to win 50 games. They don't, you know what I mean? So that's a discussion to have at that point. And is it getting stale? And maybe it is so many years. But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, like you kind of said before, we might just be in this long days. We're in February now. Guys are kind of ready to make the playoffs. They know they're going to make the playoffs, and they're just kind of ready to play some big games. But it certainly is concerning, once again, that they kind of are fading back to some of their worst habits at this point.
And you can have the spin at whatever however you want. The team is flat. There's your – deflecting to the players are playing bad. It's up to the coach to get them to not play bad. There's spinning at the other direction. Like, and you have validity in both arguments. That's why you can't pick one or the other and say, like, this is the reason. But every party has needed criticism during this 5-game losing streak. It's a 5-game losing streak, for Pete's sake. But I don't think you can look at Nate and be like, what the hell, dude? Like, this is clearly your fault. Like, I can watch the team go shoot 29% from three. Like, how are you going to point at a coach for that?
Can I ask you a question? I know I didn't tell you this before the show, but kind of related to this streak and the timing of the trade deadline and stuff like that.
Sure.
Do you think any part of the fact that, like, there were certainly rumors about Turner being traded and Aaron Holiday and things like that that maybe have led to some of this kind of slump where these guys are sort of just feel like, I don't know, feel like everything's kind of – they're kind of walking on eggshells in a way that's leading to this? And now it might just be those players.
If anything, they should think they're not now that it's over. Oh, I didn't get traded. Cool.
Yeah, but, I mean, we both know – if you're a trade rumor in February, you're going to be in one in June. Like, that's the way it is. I mean, it doesn't go away. There's an artificial deadline that says you can't do it, but it doesn't go away. Like, it's
not, I don't know the answer to that.
Right. Okay. I mean,
I just don't know the answer to that.
Right. Because I mean, that's what it feels like. I mean, it feels like this team is maybe at a moment, right, where, like, if this team comes out of the All-Star break, let's say, and they end up with 50 wins and they end up as a 4 seed, that's a team that's a locked in team, right? And we felt that way maybe before they came in. This was a team that maybe you don't want to move anybody because it's going to work. They can, and they just need to build the chemistry and get better, and they're young and stuff. But if they end up as the 6th seed and losing a sweep, it becomes, okay, we got to kind of make some more changes on the edges around here. And that's when you start to see guys like Turner and Aaron Holiday or things like that start to be on the trading block, at least, right?
Yep.
And you see coaches changing too. That's also part of it. But
exactly. So. I'm with you there.
All right. I think we've exhausted this. We've gone about 30 minutes on this whole thing. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
You want to say one thing. I like the comparison of this to the beginning of the season. And if the Pacers started 1-5, we'd be talking in a similar way.
Yeah.
But it's impossible for me to think that this requires some massive change or some crazy thing is going wrong. Like, it's just going to take time to adjust. And I hate that. Like, they're clearly playing bad. And because it's the middle of the season and they'd already banked in so many wins, like, it's very inopportune to be playing bad. So if you have to let them try to figure it out for a pretty long amount of time.
Here's what I would say. I don't know what the union rules on this, but, like, I would tell the team they on Monday after the All-Star game, they better all be back Indy practicing. I mean, that's kind of true. I would say, you know, I agree with you. I think it's just, it's, I'd be like, we need to be practicing every day because we've got an opportunity, we have a mini training camp, you know, that Monday through Thursday to get everybody figuring each other out. And you know what I mean? In a way that like, cause they need to fix this. I mean, that's the thing. And they don't, it's hard to do it mid season with games every other day. So they have an opportunity now to sort of take a step back and actually try to work on just the internal part of it, I guess. So.
Yeah.
That'd be my suggestion. I don't know what you can. I know there's a union rules for practice and whatnot. So I don't know how that works, but that would be something that you would think the players might want to talk about Monday.
Even on like non-practice days, like dudes come in and work out together and stuff.
Yeah, know? I'm sure Vic could just say we're all going to practice here this day.
Oh, sorry, allegedly, I said.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
No, but I bet Vic could be like, okay, we're all going to meet at this place. Let's all practice. Everybody has to be there. I mean, it's team captain kind of thing. It's not necessarily. I think that's something like Drew Brees did when there's a lockout with the Saints. He said, "We're all meeting here and practicing. Everybody has to be there."
Oh, we're going to go to Miami and I'll hang out. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, whatever it is, maybe something like that to work on just, and maybe it's a players only thing and that's what it needs. Some players just to work together and spend some time on the court together. Cause it might be, but I think something has got to happen to kind of jump through the scene. And maybe the losing streak will be the thing that kicks them in the ass and motivates them to have a really good end of the season.
Let's hope. Let's see where this losing streak can go by looking at the two games before the All-Star break.
Take one quick break, and then we'll bring you the week's preview. Welcome back in the Locked On Pacers podcast. So the Pacers have two games this week, Tony. Am I right?
They do. They have two games, and I have a crazy thing about both. Well, not a crazy thing about the first team, but I have a crazy stat for the second team. I'm very excited.
All right. So the first game they play this week, is against the Brooklyn Nets at home. The Nets are, let's read some numbers real fast, are 23-28, which is actually behind the Pacers for 7 in the East there. What does that make them? Like 8 games behind the Pacers, give or take.
Yep. Adam, you know what happened to the Nets in their last game?
What?
They lost 118-119 in Toronto.
Dang.
Familiar score, huh?
Familiar score. So the Nets are 22nd in offensive rating and 10th in defensive rating, and they have it the 9th pace in the league. Is Kyrie going to play? It looks like he's day-to-day. That gives me – I have no idea then.
Yeah, let me check the 130 injury report while you talk away.
So there are some similarities between this game and the last division broke up pretty badly. This was their first three games. They play the Nets, right?
Yep.
For the Nets right now, the best player outside of Kyrie really has been Caris LeVert. He's been on fire as of late. Actually, I just picked him in fantasy because he's been so good. He scored 37 points, I believe, against the Raptors on Saturday night. Yep, he had
a Nets and Pacers both did not submit anything for the injury report.
Okay, so I want to read you Caris LeVert. I believe let's do last.
Playing good. He's on my fantasy team.
Yeah, no, I just picked him up. So the last three games, okay, this is ridiculous, but he's 29.7 points on 52-69 shooting.
Wow.
He's been really good as of late, since Kyrie was hurt, right? He reinserted himself in the starting lineup, I believe, right? Once Kyrie got hurt and just like, he's been killing it as of late. I mean, you're talking like 6-7-3 last time. I mean,
he played really well the first time Kyrie went out, and everybody was like, should they be changing something? Like, no, you should not be changing something. But it was very interesting the way that people reacted to that.
So he started the first 9 games, and Kyrie, I guess, was in and out of those first 9 games, if I remember right. Right. I don't know.
Then Kyrie had 50 points on like 17 shots, and then you're like, oh, yeah.
So at that point, Caris was 17 points, 5 rebounds on 42-36, which is not quite as good as the last three. But then he got hurt and been out of the lineup since from injury at the beginning of the year, but he's been their best player, I think, in the past couple games. Obviously, he might be the guy, especially now with Kyrie. If Kyrie doesn't play, to be step up, he might be my butcher right now. I mean, that's thoughts.
So what let the Pacers get back on track early season against this team is that Sabonis just bullied the shit out of
I got hurt. Remember that kind of unlocked Sabonis then?
Yeah, he just destroyed him, and then everybody kind of could be a little more unlocked as the Nets tried to figure out how to stop Domas. I think it's going to be key that they maintain that and try to go back to that. Okay, these guys cannot stop Domas down low. We have to push that. As much as they're going to want to try to get everybody involved and get back on track, they have to get a win and get Sabonis the damn basketball.
I think that's probably the key to the Pacers being successful, and I guess any team, it really is. If you get Sabonis to become this, like, just terrible matchup for another team and make team have to double team him and stuff like that, then everything else opens up for everybody else. It's just it's an inside. I know it's weird to go inside out.
It's a good game reader. What can I say?
That's the old style way, and it might be the right way to do this.
Yeah, so the Nets have a weird rotation, too, where they don't start DeAndre anymore, but he puts it in the games, but because they've kind of been in flux with like signing 10-day guys and all that kind of stuff, or 10-day guys, 2-way guys to real deals, they have not a great bench either. And if Victor Oladipo does play, this would be a good time for Lamb and the bench to have another game. Like, I still think that lineup's played pretty well. I know most people are hesitant to think it can be good, but I still think it's played pretty well so far. I think this could be a good game for them to show it too.
Do you think Vic doesn't play? I thought he just wasn't played.
Well, I think Vic's going to play for sure.
Okay. I know he was out, but I think it was just because of back-to-back was my thought.
It was definitely because of the back-to-back, yes.
So I said my butcher. I said Caris LeVert. Who do you have for a butcher?
Spencer.
Okay.
Mr. Dinwiddie. I mean, if you look at their Raptors game, Caris was obviously ridiculous. But Dinwiddie had 21 points and 11 assists. Like, yeah, that's still a really solid game. He's a really control. If Kyrie plays, it's Kyrie. But Dinwiddie's just such a good controlled ball handler who can change speeds and things like that. He's really solid. And
so are you saying you would buy some Dinwiddie Bitcoin or eCoin?
He's selling his contract or whatever. It's the weirdest
thing. I finally read that story the other day, like the full thing. I think the whole thing is wild.
I watched a video of an investor. I think it was on NBA desktop.
Yes, that was hilarious. When he said,
and the investor's like, I would never do this.
I remember him going on. That was hilarious.
NBA desktop is the best. If you don't watch it, it's one of the best things that comes out every week about the NBA.
Yeah, did you see them making fun of Bradley Beal this week? Or
I did.
Everybody calling Bradley Beal or calling the whole All-Star thing him a clown or whatnot and something like that. And it was funny.
Jason Conception is very good. But outside of, like, if Kyrie doesn't play, Caris and Dinwiddie, we just talked about, are really good. They have no one to, like, push into the paint and create a shot for someone else. Joe Harris, great shooter. Torian Prince, who I kind of liked for the Pacers, is an okay defender, an okay shooter. And then they have a bunch of centers and, like, vets who can kind of defend, kind of shoot. So I think the Pacers just really have to really contain the two guys we just named at butchers, because – the problem they've had is they can't contain that guy, the ball handler. They get too far into the paint. They have to help too much. And then their healthy's bad too, and they give up an open three. They have to be better at containing Dinwiddie and LeVert to not give up all the threes that they've been giving up.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So do you think Vic starts this game or not?
Absolutely, I do.
Do you think it's going to be the official starting lineup of Warren, Vic, Brogdon, Turner?
We're going to get it for the second time, and hopefully they make it through a whole game without –
oh, right.
Someone kicking TJ Warren in the face.
No, did Vic start that game?
Yeah, he did, didn't he? Oh, you're right. He didn't.
Right. He only got lined up because he got hurt.
That was the Mavs game, correct?
Yeah, and that's because – no, it was the Knicks game. He got hurt in the Knicks game.
Did he?
Yeah, he got hurt in the Knicks. I'm looking at
the lineup. Didn't have Warren the whole week. Well, that changes nothing, but still.
I told you that. We talked about that for a
while. I know. I screwed that up. So this will be it. This will be the first game of the lineup. There we go.
Okay. Wow. I'm excited. I mean, I think Warren.
I don't think it'll change much, but I'm excited.
I think Warren solves some of the problems because Warren kind of, I don't want to call him selfish, but like he's the kind of player who wants to take a shot and he gets you hits it pretty well, right? So like at some point, if he gets a fire, Vic might just say, you know what, I don't need to shoot. You
that's true.
Because TJ will shoot the ball whether you want him to or not, and he'll make it enough time that it won't matter.
Yeah, that is true. I'm looking forward to this game. I hope the Nets can be the team that they are like, yeah, we got this. And they had such a rah-rah, like, team mentality the first time they beat them. If you'll remember, like, they had four guys with 20 or more points. Obviously, Sabonis kicks some butt. So, looking forward to them hopefully finally banking a win, although I would be foolish to predict it given how they have played.
So, I'm going to guess – I kind of said my expectation, which is TJ Warren him being back and whatnot. You kind of said Sabonis. Is that kind of who you're saying?
Sabonis, yeah. You know what? It's Keith. You know, I'll use him. I can't use the bench against the Bucks, so I could have used it for this one. But, yeah, I'm going with Sabonis, right? He's just got a punk DJ and Jared Allen and scored a bunch of points. He had 29 the first time they won. So.
All right. So, do you think they win or lose?
It's so hard for me to pick win right now.
I know, same.
Easy to be confident. Like, yeah, they could be the team they have a better record than, but I can't do it.
I think they lose, too. I think they're going to lose every game until the All-Star break.
Wow, Adam's going with the 7-game losing streak.
I think so. I said that after they lost Wednesday. I'm like, they're not winning again this week.
Yeah, so I thought they'd win one of the back-to-back. And, in fact, I thought they were going to destroy the Pelicans without Vic. I was wrong. Yeah. I think a loss is probably safer to assume. Because of how they're playing, but this is the team that got them back on track earlier. So it's a decent chance they can do it. It's a great matchup for Sabonis. So we'll see.
Well, part of the reason I said they will lose is because the next team they play is by far the best team in the league this year at 45-7 is Milwaukee Bucks.
Stupid. Ready? I get to do the stat now, don't I?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Since Victor Oladipo returned, the Pacers have the same number of losses as the Bucks have since November 1st.
And the Bucks, by the way, are first in defensive rating and second in offensive rating. I'm assuming all time wise, they stack up against some of the greatest teams ever. I mean,
can we just give you? Yeah, they're going to be like the third team to win 70 games, right?
Are they going to win? They might not quite win 70. I don't know if
they're on pace for it.
Yeah, but at some point they're so rest conscious. At some point, it's kind of like, well,
they might. You're right.
67.
They're on pace for 71 right now.
Yeah. Well, if they get to like 70-7, maybe, because then they might want to go for the record. But I think they'll probably lose a game here or there and end up. I think they probably finish like 68-14 or something, you know, like that.
Yeah, they're absurd, and we can give Giannis MVP now, right? Harden had a down stretch, and LeBron missed some games. Like, it's over. Giannis
is I have no problem giving the guy averaging 30 points, 13 rebounds, and 6 assists a game on 55.
Oh, and he's like the best defender in the NBA.
Yeah.
Don't forget that part.
No problem giving that guy the MVP, who's playing just 30.9 minutes per game. So if you do his per 36, looking at 35 points a game.
It's a joke how good he is at basketball.
It's a joke how good this team is. To be honest, you know what the biggest joke is? That George Hill is shooting 51% from
three. My gosh. And he's not in a three-point contest because they chose volume over accuracy. Yeah, I mean, he's shooting the lights out. He missed their last game. If he doesn't play, that'd be very helpful.
Is that sustainable? I mean, he's done it for four games, though. Like, does he just – it's just
because – let's glance over at Malcolm Brogdon, who's not shooting three well right now and shot amazing in Milwaukee, and say maybe it is.
Yeah, do you think it's just like something about playing with Giannis? Is Coach Bud? I don't know. I think it might be a little bit of all that. I mean, when you play with Giannis, you probably get such an open shot that like it's almost just ridiculous.
But all right, so they're starting Giannis, all-star. Middleton, been a top 15 player this year. Bledsoe, great regular season player. Brooke Lopez, awesome shooter and defender. And as we all know, Wes Matthews, awesome shooter and defender. Then this year they added – they maintained George Hill, who's leading the league at three-point percentage. DiVincenzo is playing great for them on defense this year. Pat Connaughton has been playing well for them. Korver can shoot. Ilya Stova is good. They just got Marvin Williams. Sterling Brown can do it. It's like, how do you win? How do you beat them?
You hope to God that Giannis has a bad night.
Maybe they arrest him before the All-Star break or something.
Maybe. I mean, maybe Giannis is already thinking about, you know, where he's going after the All-Star break. Maybe he's already – or maybe half maybe you catch Middleton in the games. Maybe you catch Bledsoe and George Hill. And he's all thinking about their Cabo vacation that they're not worried.
Oh, did I forget to mention Middleton is over 20 points a game on 50, 40, 90?
No. Well, I mean, you did, but I'm
– There we go. I mean, like, their second best player is – they're just so –
Yeah, I mean
– They're just so good.
I think we don't need to do butchers because that's probably going to be Giannis and then –
Probably.
Is Middleton.
What do you mean probably?
Well, I mean, 1B is Middleton. Middleton's going to score 40 points and be the bunch radically. I mean, yeah,
he had a 50-point game this season.
Middleton is really good. I mean, they're both all-stars.
Yeah, and then Bledsoe. Well, I think there's two things going on with Bledsoe. One is that he's pretty quick and Brogdon struggles with quicker guards in general. And two is that he wants to shove it to Brogdon for all these people that say, oh, they should have kept Brogdon and never give Bledsoe this extension, blah, blah, blah. So
– I think for the long term of the Bucks that it brought it made more sense. But George Hill just kind of is basically Wesley Matthews and George Hill slotted into Brogdon's spot and played just fine.
No, they should have just kept him because he's good. The only reason they didn't
that's what I mean. The tax. I mean, like, well, because Matthews and Hill are not going to be, you know, in 3 years from now, they're not, you know, they kept Brogdon, they had a real opportunity to build a dynasty in Milwaukee.
They could have had all three guys. It's not an either or.
That's true. That's true.
No, that's why they're amazing. Like, I cannot dunk on their decision making. They're whatever, 45.
They might have sacrificed their dynasty for maybe winning just this year. Because I don't know. You know, at some point, you're going to see some.
That is a possible discussion.
Right. Because, like, I mean, at some point, teams will adjust to them, and maybe you'll see, like, a super team out in LA adjusting to this team, and then we'll have enough to match, whatever.
So I think what I saw is, like, every Bucks loss or something, the opposing team has, like, one of their best 3-point shooting nights of the season. And that's kind of the way they defend it, is they give up threes in a way. They really incite you into mid-range shots, but they concede some corner three edge. They give up the most 3-point attempts.
So are you kind of ready? I'll read you through them real fast.
Well, I was going to say they give up the most 3-point attempts of any team in the league. So that's how the Pacers can win, is if they really try to – they never do this. They rarely do this, at least. They did pretty well again doing this against Toronto when they shot this number 39 threes and made 19. They have to do something like that. They have to capitalize on the outside shot and make them. Yes, do the opposing team's three-pointers in their losses.
Okay, I'll do them real fast. So Denver shot 22 of 46 for 48% from three, which is ridiculous.
Jeez, that's a Pacers franchise record. I bet every single one of these is going to be.
Yeah, Spurs shot 19 of 35.
That is not a Pacers franchise record.
No, but at 55% from three, which is
just, yeah, that's nuts.
In its own right, super impressive. Philadelphia shot 21 of 44, which is a 48% from three, which would be a Pacer record, right? Right, yep. Pacers is 23.
Pacers is 19.
19.
Really they tied against Toronto.
Right. Dallas shot. Only 16 of 41 this time for 39%. So not a Pacer record.
There you go.
That's you know, they lost to the Jazz really early on in the year, and the Jazz actually only shot 10 of – nope, I'm starting to hit the wrong team. The Jazz shot 15 of 36, which is 42% from three, which is a pretty good percentage. And then we go back even further to the Celtics.
There are two losses in October.
Yeah, 17 of 41 from three, which is 42%. And then their second game of the season, they lost to Miami. When they lost the Heat 131-126, the Heat shot 16 of 44 from three. So really the last like five have been extraordinary.
Extraordinary.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, the five losses since November 1st have all been on extraordinary 3-point shooting. Yeah. So to win, they're going to have to shoot really well. And that's so reductive and it sucks, but like that when
it happened last week, who knows?
And they lost anyway. So when the other team is as good as Milwaukee, your options are shoot really well from three or lose.
And that's why Justin Holiday is my X factor.
Hey, I love it. He actually shot very well in that Toronto game that day.
He shot amazing in Toronto. Very well is understatement. He shot his best game of the year by far.
He was fantastic. Indeed, he was fantastic. Yeah, McDermott, another guy, gonna have to make his shots. And let's stare at Vic here for a sec, man. Yeah. If you're 4 for 12, they just lose, right? They can't have that.
Maybe Vic finally has like a 7 of 10 game where he makes 6 threes.
They might win if that happens. That would change the way teams defend him, which would be awesome. Yeah, there's no point of even really. I mean, 3-point shooters are the X factor, basically. Yep. TJ Warren, sure. You know what? When the three isn't there, go get a bucket, I guess. They have to keep up somehow.
Is he going to guard Giannis, probably?
No, I bet Sabonis does.
Okay. Or Turner, maybe, I guess.
That's not a bad guess either. Yeah. I would personally have Sabonis on him for strength purposes, but yes. I think it's going to be one of the centers for sure.
So if Sabonis guarding Giannis, do we give it 3 minutes or 2 minutes before he's already fouled out? Or fouled in foul trouble, sorry.
Yeah, Goga's playing 10 minutes this game for sure.
At least 10 to 12 at least.
Giannis is butcher, Bucks win, All-Star break, done.
Yeah, so I think we both just said it's seven losses in a row. 31-24 by the time we come back next week.
Oof. Big oof.
Yeah.
Even just winning one, like, so huge.
You can
lose the – if you just kick the shit out of the Nets and then lose to the Bucks, like, no one will care you lose to the Bucks. Like, you can have optimism if you kick the shit out of the Nets going into the break. That game is really important.
So do you have any optimism besides that, like, something positive to end on?
Something positive to end on? Yeah, I mean, they're not gonna shoot as bad as they have been, right, in the six games back. Okay, take out
the say that. You say that it couldn't happen, but it very well
understood.
Could.
28.3% 3-point shooting in the home games since Vic returned. That is atrociously bad over six games. Like, even at league average, 36%, 7% better threes on the number of attempts they have, which is over 100. That's at least 20 more points, if not 30. Like, that is a huge number of points that they've left on the table just from shooting bad. So I think there's your optimism. They have an okay shooting game, and they're going to be in it.
Okay. All right. There's Tony's kind of optimism.
What's yours?
On a more positive note, we will be doing a mailbag podcast.
That's way too far off to be broadcasting now.
It's going to be – we'll send out a tweet in a week. Not send them yet to us, but we're going to be doing a mailbag podcast for the All-Star break, so that's a positive.
We should probably say that. We're only doing 4 this week and next week. We are taking our own All-Star break. So Friday, nothing, and
New Orleans is a part of it, right, aren't you?
What's up?
You're going to be in New Orleans. You're part of it, aren't you?
Well, the All-Star break is in Chicago.
Chicago. So. No, you're going to be in – where are you going to be?
I will be in New Orleans, from All-Star break.
That's right. That's right. I was trying to figure that out.
Your boy's going to go on the Zion diet for 5 days. It's going to be very fun.
Wait, hold on real fast. How mad were you that Zion didn't play last night after you hyped it up all week?
I was pretty mad. I mean, I've watched him play a bunch, but I wanted
to. Yeah, but
him. I still got to see him. This was pretty cool. There was a kid who had a sign that was like, I want for my birthday to see Zion play, and I know he felt bad about it. So Zion came out for the layup lines, did one dunk, and then went back in the tunnel.
Can I tell you the worst? I've had a very similar experience with him. So the first year the Warriors were good, that like 2016 year, my dad bought me tickets to go watch Steph Curry play. Steph Curry played 81 games that season. He played the only game he missed. We're walking into the stadium, and I look at my phone, and it says, Steph Curry's not going to play, and I go, damn it.
I know. I feel bad for every ticket buyer that game because he's a game-time decision too, right? So there's no way to know. It's just the worst.
Yep. It's why people get mad about
going. There were a lot of Pels fans there. They had a fun time.
Well, I guess, is there any connection besides Zion? I guess probably not.
Drew's wife is from here, and the Holiday family was all there. I don't know if that's anything.
Yeah, I don't know. There's also that really cool picture of all four of them on the court together, which is always really cool.
Yep.
The dad. Man, can you imagine having raising three sons to become basketball players? Like, you got to feel pretty accomplished when you go.
Oh my gosh, absolutely, dude. And they're all pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, you
all pretty good players.
Yeah, you raised three good NBA players.
Your sons are going to combine to make like $400 million.
I mean, just the
pretty
the
other, sick.
You have like one NBA player in a family, I'd probably one in what? I'm probably not a million, but very, very close to that, right? To have three in one family that are all
dude, Alize Johnson's money could support him and his family for the rest of his life. Like the holidays,
the money. It's just the fact that you raised three basketball players. Yeah, like
that's crazy.
Like, how do you like you know locally, right? There's the Gordons, right? There was Eric Gordon, who's awesome, and he has two brothers, but neither of them were ever getting to play in the pros. They were good basketball players, both played college, but like you get three professional basketball players in one family. That takes something.
Yeah, this something takes the balls something. Could not accomplish.
Yes.
Got him. Looking forward to this week just to see how – I like when the team has to overcome adversity. I hate that it's this weird vibe that's, like, impossible to read, but I like seeing teams overcome adversity. It's going to be fun to see how they can shake out of it. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited too. As always, you can follow our podcast at Locked On Pacers. You can follow Tony at Teased NBA. If you got any trade questions, send it his way. He will love to answer
the question. I hate you on so Twitter. Much.
You can follow me at FriedmanAdam5. Like Tony said, we'll bring you a podcast. We'll bring you four podcasts this week and four podcasts the following week. That's all for Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, have a great rest of your day.